Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. Before we get into this week's episode, did you know that Spiritual Directors International organizes travel experiences? We call these SDI Journeys. SDI has been leading passionate travelers on spiritual journeys around the world for over 25 years. Not just vacations, but truly exceptional trips filled with inspiring and enriching experiences. We have upcoming journeys planned in Scotland, New Mexico, Bhutan and Nepal, and Australia. Explore our Journeys website to find out more. sdijourneys.org. That's sdijourneys.org. Lauren Burdett is a writer, spiritual director, and podcast host. She's also a former SDI New Contemplative and has mentored people through the New Contemplatives program. Lauren has written a book called This Life That Is Ours, Motherhood as Spiritual Practice, and her podcast is called Life as Spiritual Practice. So we talked over Zoom about her experiences with the SDI community and finding the divine within the landscape of raising three young children. Also, I figured out how to use my good microphone for when I'm doing Zoom recordings. It's called technical progress. Sometimes we call it learning, and occasionally it's something that happens to me. Lauren, let me ask you about how you came to know SDI. How did you find the organization, or did it find you? And what's your involvement been with Spiritual Directors International?
SDI was introduced to us as part of our formation program. So I did my formation through NUMA, which at the time was part of Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. I live in Pittsburgh and is now independent NUMA Institute. And I think during our second year of training, the director talked to us about SDI, said, you know, if you're going to do this work, you have to be a member of SDI. You kind of have an ethical obligation to join the organization and also to, I forget now what it's called. If you guys have like a guidelines or rules of conduct or whatever it was around, you know, encouraging us to be in peer supervision and to have our own spiritual director and just laying out some guidelines. Okay, great. You know, I'll join. That sounds good. I'm new to this work and finished my formation program and was really praying with this question of what is next? What is next for me? How do I step into this work that I have been called to do? You know, I had a small spiritual direction practice at the time and a sense of there being something more. And as I'm praying with this question, I get my first presence in the mail and see an ad for the New Contemplative. And my heart just leapt in my chest when I saw that ad. I thought, this is it. This would be amazing to get to go to the conference, to get to meet spiritual directors from around the world, and to be connected with other young spiritual directors. Because there was one other young person in my formation program that I felt lonely in my work. And I thought, I'll apply. And I think I was 30 at the time. So I thought, I've got 10 years. I'll just keep applying every year. And I got in the first year. And oh my gosh, I just danced in my kitchen when I got the email. I was so excited. And that first conference for me, that was 2014 in New Mexico. And my cohort of New Contemplatives was just an instant family. We were immediately at home with each other. We had all come with this hunger for connecting with other young mystics, other young contemplatives, other people who were trying to figure out how to do this work and do it for their living, how to explain their work to the world, how to explain their deep spiritual experiences. and to immediately have people that maybe you share something that is weird or deep or hard to talk about, and they immediately, they just get it. And it's not a dismissive, oh yeah, I get it, but that heart, I get that, was deeply good. And I was privileged to be invited to be the facilitator and mentor to the next three cohorts of New Contemplatives. So there are four groups, 4 years of New Contemplatives that I got to walk with and know intimately. And that community is really my family. And I feel like that's where my ongoing formation happens. And that's where my inspiration happens. And that's where I'm held and loved and nurtured and inspired. So I am just deeply grateful for SDI and the role it plays in supporting my work as a spiritual director, but also just in caring for my heart.
Can you speak to that a little more? The ways in which the community sort of holds you and cares for your heart?
I have, particularly out of the New Contemplatives, but in other friendships that I've made through going to the conferences each year, there's probably 5 or 6 individuals that I meet with on a monthly or bi-monthly basis for mutual spiritual companionship. So we're walking closely with each other. And
you're, are these are people who are part of your cohort?
Some of them are part of the cohort, and some of them are part of other cohorts that that I mentored. And some of them, like Kristen and Diane, are friends outside of the New Contemplatives that I've also gotten to know.
Mm-hmm. And you meet monthly?
Yeah.
You do that like in person or over Zoom?
Over Zoom or Skype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's so
great.
Or phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love hearing that. I know how it might feel like the cohort programs in intensive times can be really, really rich. And then there can be kind of a letdown afterwards, right? It's like, now I have to go back to my sort of everyday normal life where I don't have all of these rich relationships. And it sounds like you've really found a way to keep that going, and also to bring new people into that, and in turn welcome them in. And that's really beautiful. It's the community that invites you in, and then you can in turn go and invite other people in. And there's this these circles of communities that coexist and overlap. And that's really cool.
And I think it's so important for us as spiritual directors to find the people who we trust to hold our stories. And I think I have experienced that it can be hard to find those people. Sometimes I think it can be hard for us to find people that we feel at home with, that we trust, that we know can go to the deep places that we go to. And so it is, and also it's hard to prioritize our own care when you're a caregiver. And so I feel like SDI has really helped me to do that.
Yeah. Can I ask you what a meeting looks like for you, those monthly Zoom gatherings? Like what is discussed, what is talked about, what is shared? And you don't have to go into detail, but I'm just sort of curious about what the format looks like.
Yeah. Okay. So these are all, when I say monthly, these are people, they're individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not gathering like 10 people on the screen at once.
And especially, I'll say that every New Contemplative cohort I've worked with has tried that, and it always fizzles out. Mm. The first cohort that I was in, I was the most successful at keeping that going. And we still, now we mostly touch in as a large group over email. Yeah. I was on a call recently with Kristen Hobby, and she said, And she said, "You're my juicy conversation for the week." But I'm trying to schedule one juicy conversation a week. I thought, I love that. I love that way of thinking about it. You know, looking at my weekly schedule and saying, where is my juicy conversation? You know, where is the place I'm going to be inspired?
Yeah. I'm thinking now about just my own experience and my own craving of those juicy conversations with people, and how that can be maybe off-putting to people, because it can come off as feeling a little intense. Maybe I was having this conversation with my wife the other night. I was like, am I intense? And she gets this look on her, like she knows, like, you know the answer, but she doesn't want to say it. So it's just like this kind of, you know, looking around, like, not quite sure how to answer you, but the answer is also yes. I wonder if you experienced that, just that craving for juicy conversation and the act of needing to cultivate that and find that and care for that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I totally do. Where that took me is like, yes, it is. I think it can be a little intimidating or off-putting, and that's why it's so important to find your people. To find those people who can easily drop into those juicy spaces with you, intense spaces.
Well, I have to plug, we are returning to Santa Fe next year for our 2020 conference. It's our 30th anniversary conference, and I'm excited for it, not just because I work here, but I've never been to New Mexico. It has this sort of romantic appeal to me. What was that conference like for you? Can you recall? I mean, besides just the rich sort of community and the new contemplatives and all of that.
So it was that for me. It was the building of family. It was also that conference was where I learned the language interspiritual, and I learned the difference between interfaith and interspiritual. And that was another time that my soul just like leapt within me. Yes, I was. It was at a workshop that Mirabai Star was doing.
Yeah,
and it feels so good. It feels so good when you are given language for your internal landscape that you didn't know how to name. And that's what it felt like. So she was really inspiring. Roshi Joan Halifax was amazing. Roshi Joan just, at my table of new contemplatives after she, it wasn't even so much her speaking, it was just her presence. You know, we all just, oh, that just happened. And even her presence, I would say it reminded me to take seriously presence, and that the way that we are in a room, the way that we are in a space matters, that the way we hold ourselves, that what we are bringing within our minds and our hearts, that it makes a difference. And therefore, with that, this work of sitting and simply being with someone and holding their story and holding space for them, that it matters.
Yes. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Such a good conference. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to ask you something else, and maybe we'll use it or not. You were talking about Roshi Joan Halifax and the sort of presence and the aura, right?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When somebody who is a name and someone we look up to as a sort of wisdom teacher and a leader, it's interesting. And I think it's something that Mirabai said, you know, we go looking for, like, we are the next gurus. Like, we are the gurus that we need. And you are somebody now who has authored a book and is a podcast host and is a presence. I wonder how you feel that responsibility or weight? Or is that something you would even consider for yourself? Or when do we make that, when we stop being the sort of like wide-eyed seeker? I mean, we are always seekers, but this, but the sort of like, I have so many questions about everything, and look at these people who seem to have their lives together, and our teachers and everything. And eventually we realize that like, we are that person. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's less a question and just more of a reflection on that.
That's really interesting, because I think it's, I think it's easy to stay at the kind of wide-eyed seeking place. And like you said, we're always seeking, and we always need more. It's easy to just say, they're the experts, you know, and look up and keep that distance. And that initial cohort, part of the gift of my initial cohort of new contemplatives was hearing the ways that each of them so comfortably named themselves as spiritual directors and companions, and owned their authority in their work. And you know, I had recently completed my formation, and I was still like practicing calling myself a spiritual director, and not, you know, I felt very tentative, and I saw their confidence, and I was inspired by their confidence. And when I decided to write the book, or not even decided, when I received the vision for the book, when I received the message that I was meant to write the book, what I felt so clearly was that what we need is people who are just actually living the spiritual life in their daily life. And I was reminded of the language of spiritual directors as not being experts, which is something I love about this work. You know, we don't claim to be experts. What we claim to be is fellow journeyers and a companion on the path, not somebody at the end. And that makes it much easier for me to share what I do have to offer, to share the wisdom that I do carry, and trust that I'm sharing it from a place of just being another person on the path, you know, not sharing it from a place of having all the answers, but from a place of, I do have this piece. You know, I do see this little bit of the puzzle, and this is what I have to share.
Would you be willing to share something of that journey for yourself? Like, what does your spiritual practice look like? How does that journey unfold for you in your life, where you sense the sacred? And I think maybe this gets to the crux of my initial question about sort of being the guru, which is, and you answered it actually really well, which is about just companioning people and knowing that your own story also has value and meaning. And so tell us about that. Like, what does that look like for you? Because I think it's just that we witness it. We witness that life with a little bit of confidence and a lot of humility. And maybe that's what people see and resonate with.
What does that look like for me? I take seriously that I need to do my own work. I need to be doing my own interior work if I'm going to have space for others. And I've been in a season, you're catching me at the tail end of a whirlwind season of where my energy has been flowing out into the world. You know, I'm launching a podcast and launching a book and deeply connective and traveling a lot and talking to lots of people. And I am just in the last couple of weeks centering back down and getting space again for extensive contemplative practice. You know, I have ongoing, breath prayers that I use. I do daily yoga. I do some sitting meditation, but I'm getting, just in the last 2 weeks, those spaces are becoming more expansive. And I'm really grateful for that, because I see the ways that my contemplative practices just calm my heart, you know, calm my anxiety, calm the busyness, helped me to be more present to my children who are 4, 6, and 8 and starting their summer vacation. Helped me to be in our fragile, challenging world.
You have 3 young children, 4, 6, and 8, and you are finding time to center yourself, to practice yoga, to practice centering prayer, to do all of the other things. How do you commingle those? How do those coexist for you? How do you go from a whirlwind of book promotion and podcasting and everything else? How do you recenter in the midst of a young family?
Lots of practice and releasing the idea of what it could be or what it should be, you know, letting go of the ideal. I feel like I spent years not doing those things so that I'll be able to get to the gym and I'd never get to the gym, or I'll be able to get up early in the morning and pray and I would never get up early, or I'll be able to book that retreat and I would never actually be able to book that retreat. And so letting go of what I wanted my spiritual life to look like, and instead looking around and saying, hey, my kids are watching a show right now. I could do a 15-minute yoga workout. My kids are playing outside. I bet I could set my timer and steal 10 minutes for silence. And maybe they'll come in and interrupt it, and letting that be okay too, and letting that be part of the practice, and letting the 10 minutes of knowing that the 10 minutes of interrupted silence in the middle of the day is better than the hour of time that I don't actually take.
Yeah, just weaving it into the margins.
Yes, that is such a good phrase. That's exactly it. Weaving it into the margins. Letting it, you know, grabbing it when you can, but letting it be okay when you can't.
Yeah. Your book title, this makes me think of your book title, This Life That Is Ours. Can you talk about how you came to that title?
So that makes me want to tell a story of another SDI conference, which was the one after Santa Fe in Louisville. And at that conference, that was the following year, and 25th anniversary of SDI, also 100th anniversary of Thomas Merton's birth. And we were given ribbons at that conference to take to the corner of 4th and Walnut, where Merton had his famous epiphany of looking around and realizing that everyone was shining like the sun, and just feeling a deep sense of connection with all of humanity. We were invited to make a pilgrimage as part of this conference. I had my newborn daughter with me, and when I wasn't working with the New Contemplatives, I was nursing her in the back of the room, and no chance of leaving the hotel, you know, this conference center, and tying that ribbon on. And hearing story after story, because you'd sit down with new people and each person would have their story of what happened to them at 4th and Walnut and what amazing experience they had. And I felt jealous. I felt jealous. And I was praying with that jealousy as I was nursing Healy in the back of the room. And I clearly heard, I don't always hear God this clearly. What I clearly heard the Holy saying was, this is not your pilgrimage. Your pilgrimage is your journey home. And realizing it was this clear sense that, well, one, that was meant to take my ribbon home, which I did, and I tied it around a lamp in my living room. And that there, and between those four walls, is where I was meant to look for the people who are shining like the sun.
Yes.
And it was where I was meant to experience the fullness of the beauty and interconnectedness of humanity. And yeah, and so that's partly where that title comes from. It's in this life that is ours, that this life is the spiritual life. It's not waiting at Fourth and Walnut, and it's not waiting at the next SDI conference or even for my next juicy conversation. You know, it is right now, right where I am. And the book, I hope, I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about helping other mothers experience that, you know, experience the chaos and the mess and the boredom and the frustration and the joy of life with children as the spiritual life, and to give them space to notice what is happening to their identity within it. Because there's a lot of, I think motherhood is a really fascinating spiritual ground. You know, your identity is kind of erased, is ripped apart, and then it's built back up, and it's not the same, but it's similar, and there's these new pieces, and trying to get space and trying to get language to tend to what is happening in your interior is really hard. And yeah, so I hope that the book helps to step into that space and helps to create space for moms to be curious and to wonder about what's happening in their hearts and where God might be desiring to meet them within their days.
From the FOMO over the pilgrimage,
yeah,
hearing the voice of God saying, like, this is your pilgrimage right here. And I hear that in you too, that there's the spiritual practice in the margins, the setting the timer for 10 minutes and the kids are watching a cartoon, I'm going to go do yoga. But then there's also, I think you've discovered that all the other stuff is also spiritual practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The language I often use is, it's all practice. And what are the practices that I need to experience that reality? What are the practices that support the practice that help me to wake up to this moment?
You know, yeah, it's all of it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know where it ends or begins anymore, which is really freeing in a way, because I don't have to think about it so much anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like you have the question, like, how can I, now I'll bring it back. How do I like find time for spiritual practice amidst all this other everyday stuff? And what you end up doing is saying, like, I'm not even gonna, that's like a false dichotomy. I'm not gonna have that question for myself anymore.
Yes.
Because yeah, it's just making me frustrated. Mm. So I'm gonna reframe that for myself. Well, when am I not engaged in spiritual practice, you know? Mm. And maybe that's the harder question even to ask. So let me ask you this. Parenting is hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I remember the sleepless nights. And the, you know, my son waking up every hour. And so we woke up every hour, mm-hmm, being a zombie for 2 years of my life. And it's just all the hard stuff. And you talked about letting go of the ideal. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe we get hung up in needing or thinking that spiritual practice is some kind of heightened state or produces a sort of ideal self. And maybe it does. And maybe that is what it does. As you see where I'm going. So when I've changed like my 100th diaper of the week and I'm running on 3 hours of sleep and my kid is screaming and he's throwing things and I'm just tired and frustrated and mad, is that spiritual practice still?
I love that. Yes and no. It raises the question of what is spiritual practice?
Yeah.
Right? And I think of spiritual practice as anything that connects us to or deepens our relationship with the divine. And I think you know, my background is Christian, and so I use language of image bearers. And I think with my children are image bearers. My children carry the divine spark. You know, I know there's holy in them, and I know there's holy in me. And so I think any time that I am caring for them, that I am in relationship with them, I am also in relationship with the divine. And so, yes. Yes, when you're at the end of your rope and it doesn't, like, the last thing it feels like is spiritual, right? Because there's none of that fluffy, peaceful, then, you know, higher place. Like, yeah. This is not higher place spirituality.
No, no.
In the muck, in the mess spirituality. So it makes me think, like, yes, it is. And let's give ourselves permission to name it. And also let's give ourselves permission to say, and it still doesn't feel good. And that doesn't make it feel good. And it doesn't make it okay. And it doesn't make it maybe what it does. I don't know what it does. I hope it makes it a little more interesting, maybe a little richer, maybe a little bit more bearable. But it's not, I feel like naming it a spiritual practice is definitely not like this magic wand of, ta-da.
Yeah.
Yeah. Painting's great. But it is. And it is. And it is and it's not. And have compassion for yourself, because I think that's true. Like,
yeah.
Spiritual practices, they do break us down. You know, they do break down your ego. They do break down the best, truest, realest spiritual practices are not about, they're not about that consolation, right? They're not about those fuzzy, warm feelings. Sometimes that's a byproduct, and sometimes it's not. Parenting is hard ego work, is hard interior work. And in that, I think it's very holy. I think stolen moments are really important. I use the language of contemplative pause, and many times during the day, I just stop and take some deep breaths and really notice what is happening and what's happening for myself and what's happening with my kids. And I've set timers on my phone to go off at different times. I've connected that to washing my hands. I've connected it to physical sensations. So like anytime I'm cold or anytime I notice that I'm getting anxious, my heart's beating faster, you know, letting that be a cue to just center down, because that's what I think we really need. I think we really need those things that help us to just to wake up a little bit to what is potentially happening. Yeah. So it feels like that to me too. It feels like a chance to be the expert in your own life, you know, to trust that you are the one who's meant to be where you are. And yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's that, you know, we each have had our pilgrimage experience already.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And there's wisdom that is gained in that experience. You know, it's what motivated you to write your book, and it's what gave you maybe confidence that your story is important and has value.
Laura and I talked about the transition from being the wide-eyed seeker to the wise guru who seems enlightened and has put everything together. So when is this supposed to happen, this transition, if it ever does? What I enjoyed hearing from Lauren is just how this transition really came about when she understood that her own life and circumstances are holy, and thus having compassion for others to empower them to see too that their everyday lives are holy. As she puts it, it's just being another person on the path. This path, this pilgrimage, this story, each of us has one. So, what is a difficult or frustrating experience that you've recently had that might actually be a crucial part of your own pilgrimage journey? talk to a trusted companion about this. Make it, as Lauren calls it, your one juicy conversation this week. Lauren's book is called This Life That Is Ours, Motherhood as Spiritual Practice. And her podcast is called Life as Spiritual Practice. You can find the book and the podcasts wherever you find books or podcasts. And you can also learn more about Lauren on her own website, laurenburdette.com. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others. Thank you.